I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, the movie Slumdog Millionaire has been nominated for 10 Academy Awards, but it has also sparked some intense discussions about how it portrays poverty in India and whether its filmmakers should be doing more for the people whose stories were told. But we'll find out what is already being done to change the conditions the film portrays. That's in just a few minutes. But first, in our international briefing, we want to talk about relations between the U.S. and Mexico. Perhaps no two bordering countries have closer ties or a more complicated relationship than the United States and Mexico. Billions of dollars in trade flow between the two countries every year, as do millions of people, both legally and otherwise. And now drugs and guns are also a concern as Mexico fights an increasingly violent war against narco-traffickers. We recently spoke with Mexico's ambassador to the United States, Arturo Serrucan. He stopped by our Washington, D.C. studios. Ambassador, welcome. Thank you for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure, Michelle.
You've been in this particular position about 2 years. When you took this post, did you realize this whole question of the drug war would be such a prominent part of your conversations with Washington?
Well, I think it was very clear from the outset, from the moment President Calderon was sworn into office in December 2006, that he could not let this situation stand and that he was willing to roll back and shut down the drug syndicates in Mexico. And given the way Mexico and the United States have traditionally dealt with the issue, it was clear that this was going to be a top priority for both countries as we move forward.
But most Americans, I think when you ask them about relations with Mexico, they think trade, probably, and they also probably think the migration of peoples across the border. Do you think, and I know I'm asking you to speculate, but you do travel widely within the United States, do you think most Americans are aware of the degree to which this is a concern in Mexico and perhaps the degree to which the American supply of guns and things of that sort in the consumer market is a concern for Mexico?
I think there's certainly a growing awareness in American public opinion that there is a brutal struggle taking place in Mexico. And as Mexico seeks to shut the flow of drugs moving through Mexican territory into the United States, we are asking for the support of the United States and of the United States Congress to shut down the flow of weapons and bulk cash which come across the border from the United States into Mexico. And when I speak about this, when I travel in the United States, many people who listen to me say this, sort of, you can see them in the crowd, they start arching their eyebrows, and I immediately know what they're thinking, and their thoughts are, well, but can't you buy weapons in Mexico? And that's precisely the key point. Mexico has very, very stringent gun control laws. There are no gun shops or no gun shows in Mexico. You can't purchase a weapon in a sports store. The only caliber...
There are no indigenous manufacturers?
There are no indigenous manufacturers except for those tied into the defense ministry that manufacture weapons for the defense ministry.
If I could get you to back up for a second, in 1994, you headed the counter-narcotics and law enforcement section at the Mexican embassy in Washington, D.C. Over this course of time, over this past 15 years, how has the issue of drug trafficking changed for your country?
Well, I think it's been a change in scope and in magnitude. As the United States was successful in shutting down Miami as the introduction point, as the gateway of all the drugs coming in from South America to the United States, the drug flow moved to the point of least resistance, which was Mexico. And when the Colombian cartels figured out that their Mexican counterparts would be much more proficient and efficient in ensuring that the cocaine transited Mexico successfully into the United States, that instead of paying them money, they started paying them with cocaine as an incentive. What that did, Michelle, was it exponentially augmented the capabilities of Mexican drug traffickers to make more money, and more importantly, to create their own distribution and retail networks within the United States.
One of the stories that has gotten a great deal of attention in the U.S. in recent weeks is that earlier this month, the retired General Mauro Iñiquinteo and two others were killed in Cancun, which is, of course, a major tourist destination. The general had been tasked with, in part, fighting drug trafficking and corruption. He'd only been on the job for, I believe, a day, less than a week. This is the sort of thing that makes people believe that President Felipe Calderon is not winning this war.
First of all, I would challenge that assertion. I think that what we're seeing on the field is that the level of violence that is being unleashed by the drug syndicates in Mexico is probably a measure of them being cornered and feeling that they're losing out. These deaths, almost all of them, are related to drug traffic. That is, they are either people who belong to a rival gang who've been killed by another gang in this food fight that has erupted over control of the markets, or they are armed forces personnel or local federal and state police killed in the line of duty. There is a very, very small number of innocent bystanders killed as a result of the violence.
I take your point, but if my child were to attend a school where a group of beheaded victims were displayed in the schoolyard, I would be concerned, number one. And number two, what incentive is there to join the anti-drug forces, to join law enforcement, to join the military, when one is such a target? So clearly, if this is intended to intimidate law enforcement, one would have to believe it's having some effect.
It certainly has a chilling effect. It has a chilling effect on society. And it has an effect in terms of some of the perceptions that I think erroneously have been generated in some of the media, where there's been, I think, a mistaken talk of a failed state brewing on the Mexican side of the border. And we can go into that in a while
An interesting point, though. I mean, there was a breakfast recently at the Mexican embassy in Paris where the Secretary of the Economy, Gerardo Ruiz Mateo, said that if President Calderon had not stepped up the war, the next president would have been a drug trafficker. I don't know if you felt that he misspoke or...
Let me put it this way. It certainly is such a problem that President Calderon decided as a stopgap measure to put the armed forces into law enforcement responsibilities. And in a country like ours, where a corporal or sergeant is probably earning around $10,000 a year, the fact that in one single seizure in Mexico City, you were able to capture $205 million in bulk cash tells you of the amount of money that is out in the system and that can bribe and can corrupt. So the first thing we want to do is ensure that having the armed forces taking on these guys in the field is a interim process and that we can pull them back into the barracks as soon as possible.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Mexico's ambassador to the United States, Arturo Sarukhan. During the presidential campaign, both the leading Democratic contenders, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, both said that they wanted to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, to which both Canada, the U.S., and Mexico belong. Has the Obama administration signaled any intention to do that?
First of all, I would not like to speak for the Obama administration, but I would probably underline for you and for our listeners out there that if you look at how the NAFTA issue was put on the table during the primary, then during the presidential campaign, and then after that, there's been a change in how the issue is being talked about. There was talk
of campaign rhetoric.
Look, I think that all of us, Canada, Mexico, and the United States, agree that NAFTA was negotiated and signed 15 years ago, and that our own economies and the global economy have changed significantly since then. And that, in general terms, NAFTA has been a success story for our three nations, and that we need to build upon it, and that to do so, we may need to see what could be revised. And I think this is the type of discussion that you saw during President Calderon and President Obama's meeting here in Washington.
So Mexico would be willing to renegotiate?
No. We've been very clear. We think that renegotiating the core component of NAFTA is a mistake.
Well, how would one revise it without renegotiating it?
Well, one thing is, if you renegotiate the core, it means that you reopen the discussions regarding the treaty itself. If you look at the famous side agreements which were negotiated by the Clinton administration, the idea would be to make sure that those labor and environmental standards are up to par and to make sure that they are enforceable, that they have teeth, and our producers and our exporters and our industry are abiding by those labor and environmental standards, but we would not reopen the negotiation of the treaty itself.
You must know, because you spent a lot of time in the U.S. and you still travel extensively throughout the U.S., well beyond Washington, D.C., that there has been a very strong anti-immigrant sentiment building in this country over the last few years, a lot of it directed at people of Mexican descent. What do you think is the cause of this?
I think there are several things playing here. For a significant chunk of Americans, this is an issue of rule of law, of people breaking the law and not playing by the rules and coming into the United States without papers. And there's a fundamental issue of people not playing by the law. But I would also underscore that for those who believe that Mexico somehow has found a safety valve in those labor flows over the of the border, they've got it wrong. We can't allow the illicit flow of people back and forth to continue because it is having first a very important effect on the well-being, on the security of these individuals. It is creating a huge amount of antibodies in American public opinion regarding their relationship with Mexico. And it is also, I think, making it very difficult for people on both sides of the border to continue ensuring that our societies remain co-stateholders to one another.
Arturo Serrocan is Mexico's ambassador to the United States. He was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Michelle.
And you can hear more of my conversation with Ambassador Serrocan online, including his thoughts about U.S.-Mexico immigration, trade, and even his predictions for the upcoming World Cup. It's part of a web exclusive. Log on to npr.org and click on Tell Me More. And now we pause to recognize a troubling chapter in the American story. Today is Remembrance Day. It marks the anniversary of President Franklin Roosevelt's order to intern Japanese Americans and Japanese immigrants in the run-up to World War II. Thousands of people lost their homes, their livelihoods, and their freedom. If your family was touched by internment, we'd like to hear your story. We'd like to know what happened to you and your loved ones after internment, and how have the lessons of that time shaped your own feelings about this country. To tell us more, please call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That's 202-842-3522. Please remember to tell us your name, or you can always go to our website, the Tell Me More page at npr.org, and share your story on our blog.